radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
And the Astros are playing poorly. But relax. Boy, boy, crazy boy. Stay cool, boy. Got a rocket in your pocket. Stay off the juice, boy. Yes, they got swept by the A's. It's embarrassing. Not just because it happened at Daikin Park and because you got outscored, what, like 30-5? It's also because it happened against the A's, who do have some young players, a couple of guys who were definitely more Rookie of the Year candidates than the Astros' Cam Smith. But I don't think there's anything to panic about. I think you got to realize, one, it's an 162-game season. It's a baseball season. Lots of baseball things happen over the course of a baseball year. But what does that mean? Well, just weird things like, I don't know, a plague upon your roster, which has led to an alarming amount of injuries, but this team overcame a lot of them for a couple of months. This was going to happen sooner rather than later. The hope is that it's just this month, maybe a little bit of this coming month as we wait for more Astros players to return from injury. But I think a lot of people who are, one, waving the white surrender flag, or two, are of the belief the Astros have to do whatever they can to upgrade their roster at the trade deadline. Now, I think being cool, calm, and collected as a fan and also as a roster builder, if you're Dana Brown, that's the key. You basically have to operate with hope in mind here. I do not think that you need to be super aggressive at this trade deadline, which of course is coming in just a few days. I think you have to realize to yourself, hey, we are limited with what we're able to do at this moment in time. And we have a farm system that, honestly, you shouldn't strip bare quite yet, even if there's not a lot going on there. This is not me saying this season is a lost cause. It is more me saying baseball has put itself in a spot where, because of the expanded playoffs, you should not be as aggressive as you normally would be as a contender at the trade deadline. I think you're rolling the dice right now and you're just hoping that players return from injury, Sean.
Yeah, I think what you should be aiming to do is to make it easier to make the playoffs, like to make the moves where it's like, hey, instead of having a AAA member on the field for this, like, again, not to pick on Cooper Hummel.
Cooper Hummel and Zach Shore.
Yeah, it's like, hey, can we not be like a heartbeat away from four people in our lineup every day being AAA players and having Victor Caratini bet third, and then you look at the lineup and who's available, you're like, yeah, I guess Caratini has to bat third. Like, yeah. I'm not saying they need to go out and get, like, the Eugenio Suarez, like, the best bat on the market type of guy. Just, like, can we improve? Can we get, like, some depth around when Peña comes back and if Myers or Paredes or Yordan come back? Because I think they're more in the if. Myers is kind of in between where I think Myers will come back, but given how he got hurt and then re-injured, he's not in the same boat as Peña, where correct. I think that's just a straight up win he comes back. But I don't think you need to try to go out and replace Paredes or replace Yordan. I think you just need to, build up the group around those
correct.
Guys.
I think your pitching is your strength, and your pitching is going through a rough patch right now. If these reinforcements that are trade deadline acquisitions, as Danny Brown will definitely frame them, come back,
there should be less taxing on them. But right now, they're certainly they're taxed. Hunter Brown's a bit of a dry spell. So
if you want to get another, you know, I've been calling it the Yusei Kikuchi 2.0. If you just want next rental arm who can slide into your rotation and be like a steady hand again for the most part for the regular season, and then we didn't see it with Kikuchi because they didn't play three playoff games, but would be like a day three starter. So you're not game three starter. So you're not depending on going from Hunter Brown to Framber Valdez to, you know, I hope Christian Javier is fully recovered, or Spencer Getty, who's never pitched in a big spot like that, or God forbid Colton Gordon or one of these guys, Lance McCullers, like one of these guys where you'd actually feel bad. If you want to go with more of a steady hand, I'm pro that, but anything that's like super high priced and, you know, I've said Bryce Matthews, I've seen enough. He's untouchable. This deadline, like, I don't think you need to be cashing in huge chips for anyone.
No, I'm like looking at Chaz McCormick. I'm looking at
exactly
those guys, and I'm not looking to get a star. I'm looking for some duct tape, Gorilla glue for the short term.
Yeah.
So we'll see what they do. Dana Brown is the general manager of your Houston Astros, and he was on the Astros flagship before yesterday's eventual loss to complete a four-game sweep at the hand of the homeless A's. What did Dana Brown have to say in this interview? Are you down with Dana Brown? We changed up the open a little bit because I realized perhaps far too late that in the background there was some interesting noises taking place. Very, very faint.
Nothing bad.
Nothing
that
bad.
We can't play, but it was distracting.
The first time I noticed it was while I was doing the show at home, and I was like, oh, wow. There's a lot of this going on. So, are you down with Dana Brown? Here is what Dana had to say about Isak Paredes yesterday. Quote, his hamstring injury is a little bit more severe than we had projected. Getting a second opinion, we'll know more in the next week. Tough to be optimistic when it's a little more than severe. End quote. If he is being this pessimistic about an injury, I am operating like he is going to be out perhaps until October. Best case scenario, he comes back in October. Maybe he gets a couple of days of ramp up in late September. But this is going to make things very difficult for the Astros because of just how clutch he's been specifically at Daikin Park with his pull waves. Other injured Astros. What's going on with Yordan Alvarez? Per Dana Brown. Are you down with Dana Brown? Yordan is ramping up his workload, and once he gets through that hurdle, we'll get him on some lives. We want a short stint rehab-wise wherever he goes next. Said Dana about Yordan, I'll take a 75% Yordan Alvarez over some of the guys we have now. Damn. But we all agree.
Fair, but like also, I think Espada also had gave a quote at some point where he's just like, yeah, you know, with the guys we're having, you know, like he gave like a really, I mean, it's honest, but it's also got to suck to be Zach Short and just be like, I get it, guys. I'm not Jeremy Payne.
Kennedy
Come
Corona.
On.
Yeah, but all these guys have to know. I mean, we're playing on a first place baseball team. And we're not just playing. We're playing almost every day.
But
they have to be self-aware to be like, yeah.
We're winning enough. You know?
Yeah, like, they were winning enough. They can't do that anymore. It's 11 of 16 that they've dropped. So they can't do it now.
That is true.
But
after this
at
series,
first, though, for sure, some of them were like, this is what it's always like.
Yeah. I mean, even like them being 500 before the A series, being like, we're whatever, 11 and 12.
Yeah.
Like, that's not that bad, guys.
The first two teams I ever played on in sports, we won every single game for 2 years. And I thought that was just how sports went for whatever team I played on, only to find out the hard way, no, that is not how it goes.
No, so
they had a nice first experience, but yeah, most teams lose.
Yeah. Ours was always like, it was like 2 year blocks. And so like 8 and 9 year olds. So when you're 8, you like lose all the time. And then when you're 9, your team wins all
that
the time.
Sense
That's
too.
Just how it goes.
That's how it went. more. Are you down with Dana Brown? The Astros GM was on the Astros flagship yesterday. Dana Brown thinks Jeremy Pena, quote, will be back here soon, end quote. Could be as early as August 1st. They want to get him in a few rehab games, then get him back with the club. Well, he said that yesterday, which was the 27th. And if I'm doing my calendar correctly, Friday could be Jeremy Pena day. I am not expecting to see Jeremy Pena on Friday, though. I am not down with Dana Brown pushing this out there.
No.
August 1st.
I mean, I need him in a rehab game before I can go, yeah, he's playing 4 days from now.
Same.
Like, I get he's probably not going to rehab for very long, just given the nature of his injury and how, you know, relatively small amount of time. And it was just a broken bone in his rib. It's not like these pitchers that need to make several starts to build back up. It's like, no, it just needs to see some pitching, get his timing back. But, yeah, I need him to actually do that before I can say 4 days from now is a realistic timetable.
Are you down with Dana Brown? The Astros GM was asked about Christian Javier and Spencer Arrighetti. As far as Arrighetti goes, he's going to make another rehab start. And if all goes well, he's expected to rejoin the big league club after that. I'm glad he said if all goes well, given that Spencer Arrighetti got hit by an effing batting practice fly ball and it hit his thumb. Of all the places it could have hit in the park, it hit his thumb and broke it. It is the most crazy injury of all the crazy Astros injuries this year, bar none. There's no second place. Arrighetti broke his thumb because somehow, someway, a batting practice fly ball hit it. I mean,
yeah,
bonkers.
It could hit not just like any other part of the field. It could have basically hit any other part of Spencer Arrighetti, and it would have been that big of a deal. Like, that and his elbow would have been the only two parts that it would have been as bad.
Fleshy part of the thigh. It would have been nice. Just hit him on the ass.
Like he's getting shot?
Yeah. Instead,
flesh wound.
It's throwing hand right thumb. I mean, good God.
If he was just facing the other direction, it doesn't matter.
Truly. Christian Javier, meanwhile, per Dana Brown, will be shortly after Arrighetti. Okay. Well, I'll believe that when I see it. With Javier coming back from what he came back from, that's one you really got to wonder about. Are you down with Dana Brown? Lance McCullers, who's been dealing with a blister, is that the most recent injury?
Blister. No. I think this is a let's figure some things out injury. I don't think he actually has a blister. Maybe if he does have a blister, it's not actually IL worthy.
When did this happen? Was this while I was on vacation?
Wednesday. Yeah. But it was after another terrible.
He makes it so hard.
It was after a terrible McCullers start too.
He makes it so hard to defend him. It really.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't. Not like that. by the way, I read this write up about Lance McCullers for Dana Brown. We want to get him throwing again. Get him stretched out.
Let's do it.
Phrasing. Hopefully, get him back in a few weeks. Oh, a few weeks from a blister.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I do buy this. This is the Lance McCullers experience.
I it's just so conveniently timed of like, hey, he's had three straight terrible starts. Hey, he's got a blister as he works on something.
Brandon Walter. He got hurt. What a surprise.
This was, I think, Friday.
That was Friday. Okay. Yeah. He'll be out maybe 3 weeks or so. Hopefully get him tossing a ball soon. 3 weeks, that's the end of the year.
Well, it's also elbow inflammation.
Oh, geez.
That was the actual diagnosis.
All right, well, he's gone. He's done.
It was elbow inflammation. I think you'll enjoy this. Brandon Walter has said, it's no big deal. It's just I've never pitched this many innings before, and so my elbow's a little inflamed. And so basically he said, hey, you know what's a precursor to Tommy John surgery? It only happened because of another precursor to Tommy John surgery. But Dana Brown says it's only a few weeks, so I have no reason to believe that he is telling nothing but the truth.
Right.
He swears on the Bible before he goes on with the
Astros flagship.
That would be a great bit.
That would be funny.
They brought him a Bible,
Dana,
to swear on.
We need you to swear on this Bible, okay?
Now, what's up with Brandon Walter?
What's going on? So, there you go. That's Are You Down With Dana Brown? The last one on the trade deadline. We'll talk more about this at 2 o'clock. Do the Astros need to make a move at the deadline? I don't think they do. I think you roll the dice and you hope that guys get healthy by the end of the year. I think the AL West has helped you out on that front. And also, what you did the last couple of weeks before this recent 2 to 3 week stretch has helped you out there. On the trade deadline, we were already looking for a left-handed bat and potentially an infielder. There's a good chance they will have to trade from the major league roster to get a deal done. We will see what happens. Trade deadline is Thursday afternoon. Sean Mapes is behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. That is Are You Down with Dana Brown. Let's just roll right through it here because we do have an update today, and it has to do with the health of Colorado head coach Deion Sanders. So rather ominous announcement was made yesterday. Deion Sanders was going to hold a press conference this afternoon with some medical staff with him. Today he announced he had undergone surgery to remove his bladder after doctors discovered a tumor there. Sanders said since the surgery, there's no traces of cancer. He will continue to coach this season. He's been out of the public eye for much of the last few months, except for at the Big 12 media days. He deflected questions about his health at the Big 12 media days. But if that's the announcement, great. Did they take his bladder out? Does that mean he's got a bag? Does that mean he's got a catheter or something like that? I am a little bit curious. I don't know if anyone did the follow-up questions on that one.
I think it's the tumor in his bladder got removed.
Gotcha. Okay. It sounds this ESPN report says he underwent surgery to remove his bladder. So, ow. But, okay.
Now, if that's in the story, then I guess.
Seems he's doing better. Listen, it's ESPN. This is the top bar for journalism when it comes to sports media. But also, a lot of journalism is slacking these days, and language can be a little bit confusing. I am not a doctor. I'm from the house of a learned doctor. But I could not tell you whether or not he has a bladder right now. All I know is, damn, that sounds painful. I'm happy Deion's okay because I think college football would suck without Deion Sanders. Even if you are annoyed by the Colorado experience from time to time, the Deion Sanders braying and being cocky and all that stuff, college football needs more guys like Deion Sanders because everything is boring and vanilla outside of him, especially in a post-Nick Saban world. I like Deion. I've always enjoyed Deion. And it's crazy Deion's had the health issues that he has had, given that this is like the picture of health. He famously never drinks. This was also, I think also he was big into saying like, yeah, I didn't do anything. But he's had blood clots. He's had toes amputated. He had clots as well. I mean, you would think a guy that was the freak athlete that he was playing two sports would be someone with genetics that would keep him from having issues like this. I guess death comes for us all, but Deion, he's great, and this is very cool to see. Sean, you sent me this post about something he said at his press conference, courtesy of David Ubin, who is a college football writer for The Athletic. Sanders is railing against the information available on search engines when you have cancer, says it should be changed. Quote, when you Google it, it basically says, you gonna die, dog. Damn, that bums me out.
Yeah, yeah. There's another quote where he mentioned how many toes he had. Like, he's been through a lot or whatever. He mentions how many toes he has. So, yeah, Deion seems like he's still Deion, and he's gonna continue being Deion on our TVs on Saturdays during the fall. So that's obviously good. There was like I do especially like this. I like it because Deion Sanders is cancer free. I like that.
Yes.
I also like that I don't know, the more reckless social media like aggregators that want to pretend to be journalists, like they had, there's a couple of like, oh, he's going to announce that he's retiring. Like then like people were actually like running with like, yep, he's announced this because he's going to retire on Monday. And then like they all get kind of shoved in a locker by Deion Sanders. I like that. I like the little bit of like, hey guys, you know, just because you make a graphic for everything doesn't mean you're right.
Yes. And I hate those people. I hate them. It's been tough coming back to social media and following the other people who have takes. I like going to football training camps But I also realized that there was very little to seriously take away from a football training camp outside of disastrous performances and injury updates. To this point, there's very little that has taken place at Houston Texans training camp that's going to affect what happens this coming season. And I've seen a lot of people like posting a clip of, I think it was one of the Texans accounts online posted a clip of like Dalton Schultz catching a pass one-handed. And I don't think anyone was covering him. They're like, man, I think I was really wrong on Dalton Schultz. Like, how would you know? How would anyone know? And God, I know I'm just becoming a salty, old, hates everything, yelling at a cloud guy when it comes to the offseason. But at this moment in time, the Texans are largely what they were at the end of last year, minus entirely different offensive line, entirely different offensive line coach, entirely different skill set of receivers, entirely different offensive coordinator, for God's sake. A lot has to go right for this team to be operating on all cylinders by the start of the season. And even more has to go right for this team offensively to be operating on all cylinders by the end of the year. So to bring it back to what Sean was talking about with how Deion gets a little victory over all these social media dorks who are like acting like they have some sort of update. Yeah, I agree, because this time of year,
yeah,
when there's no football and everyone's just speculating recklessly, does get a little frustrating for me because I don't play that no mo. Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You want to jump in on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston? 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitch at ESPN 975. And on the brand new ESPN Houston app. And don't forget, Thursday, we're going to be hanging out at Carbach from noon to 6. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby. Yeah!
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Paul Gallant.
38 days away from September 4th when the Philadelphia Eagles unveil banner number 2 against the Dallas Cowboys. 38. Not an exciting number. The two NFL Hall of Famers by number 38. Cal Hubbard, who was born on Halloween in 1900, played for the Giants, Green Bay, and Pittsburgh. There's also somebody named Arnie Herber, who played for the Packers from 1930 to 1940. 4 championships with the Packers.
Wow.
NFL MVP in 1933.
4 rings, or whatever they gave out for when you won in the 30s, but he had 4 of them.
Yeah. MVP 1933, so in the midst of the Depression. You can't even do anything when you win MVP in the midst of the Depression.
Well, he's not going out popping bottles?
No. It's like, do you get extra bread?
Was that during Prohibition?
I don't know. I honestly, you know, for the Greatest Generation, if the Greatest Generation had to go through, and my timelines might be getting mixed up, because I think that Prohibition was the 20s and that the Depression was in the early 30s. Imagine if the Depression happened and Prohibition was still going on. Like, that would suck. That would suck so much. Anyway, the number one Texan to ever have worn the number 38, Daniel Manning. One of 2 key signings for the Texans from the 2011 season. He, as a safety and kick returner, along with Jonathan Joseph that offseason, helped legitimize a Texans defense that had always been a bit of a mess. Wade Phillips was the architect of said defense starting in 2011. And without Joseph and Manning, I don't think the Texans do what they did in those 2 seasons. There was a moment for Daniel Manning early on in the 2012-2013 divisional round playoff game against the New England Patriots. This was after the Letterman jacket game, where on the opening kickoff, Daniel Manning took it back 90-something yards, and everyone thought, oh, Texans are going to win this thing for a second. And then they kicked a field goal, and it wasn't the murder that the Letterman jacket game was, where the Texans were down 28-0 early on, but yeah.
They got handled pretty well.
It was a 2-touchdown game, right?
Yeah. That is like the perfect thing of like, it. you don't get a touchdown off that return, all right, you can pack this thing up.
Yeah.
Like, and it's the encapsulation of every time the Texans made the divisional round of just like, oh, this wasn't the perfect game. Like, the Texans didn't get the perfect, like, sequence of events to happen. All right, they're not beating the Ravens. They're not beating the Patriots in a game where it's, like, not every, like, lightning in a bottle catching breaks. Like,
you need crazy things to happen.
Those two teams are really good.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Honorable mention to DeMarcus Faggins, who was a Houston, Texas player. What are you laughing at? What is anyone laughing
at?
What is anyone laughing at?
I have a lot of good memories of Faggins.
Yeah. That's an unfortunate last name. It's just an unfortunate last name to have growing up.
Yeah. I was going to say boy named Seuss situation.
Yeah.
He ended up being an NFL
last
player.
Name.
Yeah.
2002 through 2008. So OG Texan, if I'm not mistaken. So there you go. That's the numbers side of things. There's a very interesting situation that has taken place with the Las Vegas Raiders. The Raiders released Christian Wilkins 1 year into a $100+ billion contract that he had signed last offseason. New regime with Pete Carroll in there. I guess he suffered some sort of injury this offseason, and there's a dispute about, I guess, his actual process for rehab, among others. But everything's been very murky. I saw Pete Carroll, now head coach of the Raiders, asked about it and basically said, yeah, we just didn't see how he could be on this team next year. There's also been some very interesting rumors coming out about Christian Wilkins, who you might know as somebody who, in the midst of the national championship game that Clemson played against Ohio State, may have grabbed inside a hole that you're not supposed to of a player who was down on the ground. And on top of that, after the championship was won, proceeded to, on a stage, as a 300-pound guy,
this is actually just impressive,
do a split.
Yeah,
he did a split.
He basically, like, put his leg up, grabbed his ankle, and just dropped down. A split.
Dropped down.
Again, pretty impressive.
A little weird.
A little weird, and it's resurfaced because of that and the stuff he was doing at the... That normally happens in the bottom of a pile that he wasn't doing in the bottom of the pile. He's doing it out in the open.
He was doing it out in the open. And
on a national championship game.
Seems to be rather handsy.
Yes.
You know.
So there's a lot of rumors about what's happening.
Right.
Or why the real reason, because the Jones fracture thing. Like, okay, but why release him right now
exactly.
over this?
So this is...
Schefter on McAfee gave some insight.
Is he, how injured is he? When's he back? What happens here with Christian Wilkins?
Again, from speaking to people inside the locker room, I think what everybody's dancing around and tiptoeing around is the fact that when you speak to people there inside the locker room, they say that Christian playfully went to kiss a teammate on top of his head, and those same people said that that player took offense to it. So that's what everybody's been dancing around and tap dancing around, an incident in the locker room where he allegedly playfully kissed a teammate on top of his head. That teammate felt offended by it. And that's what a lot of this talk and speculation that people have just been floating around out there is about.
So that guy clearly can't travel to Europe. If that's all it is, soft boys, whoever that player was. If that's all it was, as someone who is very confident in his sexuality, I think it's very weird how alarmed guys get when it comes to, I guess, public shows of affection, handsy shows of affection, you know? Because in a football locker room, how often will a coach smack a player appreciatively on the ass? Same kind of thing. I don't know why it is that way. It is a little bit weird when you're first introduced to it, but this is really harmless if that's all it is.
Yes, and I will say Mike Florio, in a very Mike Florio way, did quote tweet this video from the Pat McAfee show and said, quote, that this is definitely not the story that has been making the round. So maybe this is a more sanitized version, or this is a, you know.
It must be.
It's like it's one part of a bigger, you know, the thing that's going on that why he's not loved, I would say, in the Raiders locker room. Because that seems to be some of it, is that there's some locker room issues with Christian Wilkins. Which is very interesting, because he was never, like, he was always kind of viewed as, like, a good locker room guy. He was, like, those Clemson teams. Like, he was the leader of that Clemson team.
Clearly was the leader of their defense.
And then with the Dolphins, he was very available. He was always not just he's out there every game guy. He was like an over 90% snap count guy for a defensive tackle, which is crazy. So, yeah, it's definitely weird. I don't know how much, you know, I hope we learn more just because it's interesting.
I'm curious.
It's so interesting. But it doesn't seem like, given what we know now, it's anything that's like super disqualifying from being in a locker room.
Yeah. If it were something along the lines of what he did to that Ohio State player, look up the video for yourself. If it was a little closer to what that Phillies fan and Yankees fan were doing in the upper deck of Yankee Stadium, look that up for yourself as well for context. I would get it. But if it's a kiss on the head, come on.
Yeah, yeah. It does seem like there's more to the story. Denigrate Adam Schefter, but it does seem like the story that, like, Christian Wilkins people puts out to be like, see, it's not that bad. Like,
yeah.
Instead of having it be like, no one knows what's happened, it's a bunch of rumors, to get Schefter to say on McAfee that it's like, oh, it's just a little kiss. Just a little kiss.
I've seen weirder stuff happen in my high school football team's locker room than this. And I mean, to me, this is pretty tame. This is an ogre stuff at Northwestern.
I was going
to
say, there's a lot of, and maybe some of it is, like, these guys are, you know, 25, 30-year-old millionaires, so maybe they don't want to get down the same way that high school locker rooms do, but still, this does seem tame.
What else do we have here? 10-minute drill, 38 days away from the start of the NFL season. Rashawn Slater, Chargers left tackle, got a new contract, 4 years, $114 million or so. This is the price of good offensive linemen, which the Houston Texans, on paper, have zero of right now.
I was going to say, don't have to worry about this. Yep. Don't have to worry about it. I mean, happy for Rashawn Slater.
I saw a couple of people in the local market that were talking about how, if you're a Commanders fan, I think it was Sean Pendergast. About like, well, this is what you're going to have to watch out for with Laremy Tunsil right now. And you know where I'm at? I'd take that, because we're offensive line. I'm not feeling it on paper right now. I saw that the update today from Texans training camp, I did not go out today. I will be going out for the first time tomorrow and on Wednesday. But per DJ Bien-Aimé of ESPN, as far as the offensive line went, some moments of yuck, some moments of good. This was more seesaw. There were some plays when pressure was created because of the secondary forcing Stroud to hold the ball. So those plays aren't a negative on the offensive line. But I've also seen a couple of times where there have been little things that have popped out about how Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter have been working some of the guys on the edges for the Texans, who, by the way, do not have a Laremy Tunsil anymore, no matter what you think about the false starts and all the other stuff. Tunsil is good enough to, at the very least, be able to block the best defensive pass rushers in the league. There's no one on the roster right now that should be trusted today. End of the season, we can get back to that. But Stroud might be dead by that point. I'm just being perfectly honest about this. I think there's far too many people that are assuming massive improvement this offseason entirely because they got a new offensive coordinator, a new offensive line coach, and an entirely new cast of characters. And I suppose it can't be any worse than it was last year. But how much better is it?
No, I disagree that it can't be, or that it can't be worse. It can definitely be worse than last year.
No Laremy Tunsil, so it's definitely on the table.
They didn't set any records last year. It could be worse. Yeah, it could definitely be worse. They traded the best left tackle.
Yeah. They didn't set any records last year when you put it like that.
It was a bad offensive line. It wasn't like the worst we've ever seen. In Houston, it wasn't the worst that we've ever seen. So, I can see wanting to be optimistic about, like, the overall culture, what they're trying to build there. But at the end of the day, Blake Fisher, Jake Andrews, Cam Robinson, Ursary, like, these are the guys that you're having to depend on.
Yes.
I think it's okay to accept that, like, hey, it might be tough sledding, especially in practice. John Harris wrote about this last week, where Ursaru was getting worked by Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. He was basically like, yeah, he gets worked by those guys. But overall, like, you see, like, building blocks of a good tackle there. I'm like, yeah, of course he gets worked by Will Anderson in practice. Like, who wouldn't?
Yeah. Yeah, that is a fair point. We'll see how the offensive line does. Wrapping up, 10-minute drill, 38 days away from the start of the NFL season. Terry McLaurin has reported to Commanders training camp but isn't practicing. He's got an ankle injury. He wants a new deal.
Yeah, he has a new deal.
Hold
in.
In
injury.
And the Bengals did sign Shamar Stewart, their first-round pick, so he's in.
Yep.
But Trey Hendrickson's not there, and it's been really interesting from afar keeping tabs on everything that's being said in Cincinnati about those negotiations. Mike Brown's denying that he's cheap. Dude, everyone thinks you're cheap. You should not even acknowledge this. You shouldn't even answer those questions or make yourself available. Everyone thinks you're the cheapest owner in the NFL. It's a long track record of it. We're talking 20 years of it or something like that. The longer Trey Hendrickson is out, the better things are for the Houston Texans in 2025. That's all. And the Texans own that ass. That's the one team. Like, that's the Texans' bitch, the Bengals. I don't know why, but over a couple of decades where both of these teams have been pretty good, but never great, probably around the same level, all things considered, except for the Bengals made it to a Super Bowl once. It's very funny that the Texans own that.
Yeah.
And it is good. The longer Trey Hendrickson is out, the better for the AFC and for CJ Stroud potentially not dying this coming season.
Yeah.
Just keep that in mind.
It's one less guy he has to worry about.
Yes. Come playoff time. Although, I feel like he'll be back. I feel like Trey Hendrickson will be back at some point. But right now, he's in Florida. He's not with the Bengals. Sean Mapes is behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It is the Paul Gallant Show, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. I am back. You want to chime in, you know how to do it. 713-780-3776 to call the text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitch at ESPN 975. Also available on the brand new ESPN Houston app. Available on your iPhone and on your Android. Up next, an all-time quote for a man who was facing death. Stick around.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is the Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Most interactive sports talk show in town. Astros 4-game swept by the A's over the weekend. I think everyone's got to take a bit of a chill pill, though, when it comes to freaking out about their prospects this season. They're incredibly banged up, and they were due for a stretch like this. They should not have been able to pull off the stretch that they did a couple of weeks ago, where they swept the Philadelphia Phillies, took 2 or 3 against the Cubs, and then swept the Dodgers. That shouldn't have happened. It did, even with all the injuries the Astros were dealing with. They are now dealing with more. It is certainly alarming how many they've dealt with. My hope is that guys get healthy sooner rather than later, but right now that's really all you can hope for. It's not the most hope to stand on. But I do think that's where you should be at, as opposed to getting pissed about them losing and getting swept by the A's. You should look at it from a perspective of everything they have done in spite of the injuries this season to this point is gravy. They're in first place, and they're within striking distance of the 2 seed. And we're talking a game's worth of striking distance.
Yeah.
If you get a bye week with what you're dealing with right now, act to God. Shout out to the AL West for helping the Astros out. God wills it.
God wills it. Yeah, there's a point last week, I want to say it was Wednesday. It was in the middle of the Diamondback series where they had the best record in the American League. So these things seesaw so back and forth so fast. They won 4 straight. Now they've lost 4 straight. And it's just like at a certain point until the reinforcements come, I am just like, whatever happens, happens. Like, they're still up, I believe, 4 in the division on both the Rangers and the Mariners. Slight surprise is like, hey, Rangers, they've they closed the gap at least on the Mariners. So it probably will be that three-way fight that we thought we were getting all season long before the season started. It looks like we're actually going to get some of that over the last stretch.
I can tell you someone the Astros will not see, though. Pour one out, everybody. Not an injury update. Per Lindsey Singleton, quote, "Let me break the news. John was just DFA'd," end quote. So John Singleton, who was back with the Astros.
What was her sources?
I wonder. She qualified. But per Lindsey, John got DFA'd.
Okay.
So bummer for John, who I know is trying to get back out there. I've never had any, you know, the guy I think had some important moments the last couple of seasons with the Astros.
Yeah, it was good. In spots.
I suppose if you want to look at it from bright side, does this mean that there is some Astro that is close to returning or that there is some Astro that is close to being acquired? We shall see. Trade deadline is on Thursday. But that just went down about, Lindsey posted that at 1:40 p.m. Colorado head coach Deion Sanders battled and beat bladder cancer. He talked about this earlier today at a press conference. He underwent surgery, had his bladder removed after a tumor was discovered there. Deion Sanders is one of the all-time quotes in the world of sports, whether it was as a player back in the day, as an analyst for a brief period of time, or now as a head coach of a Power 5 college football program. This is a pretty funny line talking about his lack of a bladder, which we were wondering about earlier in the show.
Now I depend on depend. You know, if you know what I mean. I truly depend on depend. Like, I cannot control my bladder. So I get up and go to the bathroom already 4 or 5 times a night. But then I'm sitting up there waking up, you know, like my grandson. We're in the same thing. You know, we got the same problem right now. We're going through the same trials and tribulations. We kind of see who has the heaviest bag at the end of the night. Like, it's ridiculous. But I'm making a joke out of it, but it's real. Like, it is real. It is real. It is real. So if you see porta potty on the sideline, it's real. Okay? I'm just telling you right now, you're going to see it. You're going to see the practice. You're going to see one because it is unbelievable. Like, dozing off and waking up. First thing, I'm grabbing my crop to see if I peed on myself. And it's just totally different. And I know it's a lot of people out there going through what I'm going through and dealing with what I'm dealing with. And let's stop being ashamed of it. And let's deal with it. And let's deal with it head on. And
that's cool. Laughing at himself. I mean, that sucks. That would suck. Where you don't have any control over it and you're in your late 50s. I'm happy for him that he has that perspective. Is it possible that this happens in a game? Is it possible? I mean, he's got to wear black pants now. Like, he's got to wear black pants every single game. First off,
yeah.
Dry fit black pants, you got to. Because, I mean, there could come a moment where it's in a critical spot. Yeah. Uh-oh, you got to use the porta potty on the sideline. I mean, listen, on a football field, peeing yourself is acceptable. I've peed myself on a football field.
Really?
Yeah, I had to. There was no bathrooms.
Oh, okay.
We played a school in Fort Myers, and they didn't have a field, so they were playing in a park, and there was a football field in the park, and it was a nice field. There's a playground near it, so you couldn't go to some bush or anything like that to go to the bathroom. No, you had to go right there. And I remember one of my teammates who went on to play at the West Point. You know, he played for the Black Knights. I remember he told me in the middle, because I had to go, and we had driven 2.5 hours down to this place, and, you know, all of us growing up playing football in Florida, you drink so much water. I know everyone who played in Texas probably did the same thing. We drink 20 ounces of water per class, so we do always have to go to the bathroom. And my teammate, Brogan, he looks at me and he's like, "Hey, Paul." I looked down at him by his feet, and it's just streaming. And I was like, "All right, well, I guess I got to go myself." So then I did the same thing. So on a football field, it's okay. It's okay to pee your pants.
Yeah.
Peeing your pants is cool. Consider me at least that one time against Gateway Charter, Miles Davis. Scored a touchdown that game.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
pee in my pants.
The former offensive lineman for the Broncos, now on TV a bunch, stink.
Mark Schlereth.
Mark Schlereth. Yeah.
Yeah. Formerly on Breakfast Ball, RIP.
Yeah. I remember, like, he would tell stories on, like, Mike and Mike about peeing. Like, he would intentionally pee himself to be nasty. like that was what he had said. He would do it to be nasty. Like, so, like, I don't know. He's extra gross and mean.
You wouldn't be able to tell, though, unless this person is failing the Tom Herman pee scale, you know? Because even if you're wearing white, and the Broncos had white pants.
Yeah, they did wear white pants in that era.
They wore them a lot. The home uniforms were always white. Like, it would have been visible, but generally, everyone at the NFL level, you're super hydrated, so no one could ever tell.
No, but, you're not a bad teammate or whatever Tom Herman, whatever the bad
yes,
parts
exactly.
of the chart was.
I mean, listen.
You're a bad guy. Actually, you're a bad guy.
For the many bad things that Tom Herman did, I agree with that one.
It's
That's
great.
Smart.
It's something, and maybe this is just because I was a student at the time that this chart came out, so it was pretty big news. I always take a little mental check when I go. I'm like, I think I pass, but probably not.
Me too.
I think, like, ooh. This is bad.
Don't ever listen, guys. Drink so much water that it's never ever
just
ever yellow.
Always think that Tom Herman will be over your shoulder.
He'll
looking
bench
out,
you.
Looking at what color it is.
He'll bench your ass. You know
he will.
You're gonna be putting time out. But anyway, Deion Sanders. It's great that he's staying in college football.
Yeah,
and
I think it's cool that he's talking about it.
I do
openly.
Too. I do too. I mean, these things do happen, and this is one of the more embarrassing ones. You know, peeing your pants. No one ever lives that one down. So good for Deion having a good sense of humor about it. And we'll see what he does at Colorado this coming season. Sean Mapes is behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show. ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call and text and YouTube at ESPN Houston, Twitch at ESPN 975. Should the Astros be major buyers at the trade deadline later this week? We'll discuss. Stick around.
Follow ESPN Houston on social media at ESPN 97.5.